Hey everybody, Mark Ashton coming at you with the January 29th edition of Project 4-4. Just in case you're new and joining us on this journey, I'm the lead pastor of Christ Community Church, and we are headed through a year-long reading the Bible in chronological order. A great guy who's a real scholar named John Soper put together some devotional materials that go through the beginning of the Bible, beginning to end, and we've borrowed heavily from his materials in order to be able to create these audio and visual devotionals for you, and I hope you enjoy them as we head through. Today, we're going to be talking about Exodus 25, 26, and 27. And today you encountered the instructions that God gave Moses for the building of the tabernacle, the place where the presence of God would dwell with his people. Very important place in this world. And this is one of those things that because it's got so many little details in this passage, it's easy to overlook. But when you know what you're looking for, you'll find that the detail is actually quite symbolic and powerful. God said to Moses, "Make this tabernacle and its furnishings exactly after the pattern that I show you," which demonstrates just how important it must have been to God in order to make this particular tabernacle this way. And the instructions he gives them are detailed in the extreme. What we have in these chapters is nearly an architectural blueprint. And over in chapters 35 to 38, there's an almost identical repetition said here as the actual building of the tabernacle is recorded. So there's five different names in the Old Testament that are given to the tabernacle. It's called a sanctuary. It's called a holy place. It's called a tabernacle, which is a dwelling place. Now, interestingly, there's an interesting allusion to that word in the New Testament in John chapter 1, verse 14, where it says, "And the Word became flesh and made its dwelling among us." The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld its glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. But what it really says is the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us. Now, the tabernacle was the idea of God dwelling among men. So when Jesus came and he tabernacled among us, it was God making his dwelling among men as well. Revelation 2:13 says that in the end, he will make his dwelling place among men. He will tabernacle with us. Well, the third name is in the next chapter, and it is tent, a temporary or collapsible dwelling. Later on, it's called the tent of meeting, a physical place that was a place that people would meet with God. And then finally, it was called the tent of the testimony. But regardless of what name you call it, the tabernacle is a significant place, and it was meant to point towards Jesus. When we read the book of Hebrews a bit later in our study, we'll discover some more of the specific ways in which God planned for the tabernacle to point us to Christ, but consider these few right now. One is that there were three parts to the tabernacle: an outer court, the holy place, and the Holy of Holies. Instead of restating much of what you read, let me hit the highlights. The outer court was entered in through a gate, and if we estimate its size in feet, we have a court of about 150 by 75 feet. The four sides were supported by pillars, 20 to the long sides, 10 to the short side, from which the curtains were hung. The building itself had two sections, the holy place and the Holy of Holies. It was about 45 feet long and 15 feet wide. The front part was the holy place, and the back part, separated by a veil, was the Holy of Holies, which was about a 15 by 15 foot cube. The first furnishing that you encounter as you enter the outer court was the altar of burnt offering. Probably the most significant thing about the altar was its location just inside the gate. That was a stark reminder that if you want to walk into the presence of God, something must be done about your sin. There must be a sacrifice. Atonement must be made. That bloody altar wouldn't be a pleasant sight, but it would remind the people of God in a very vivid way just how hideous sin is and just how holy God is. Today, we don't ever need to look at a bloody altar or smell burning flesh or lay hands on a sheep as the priest slits its throat in our presence, and to be honest, I'm glad for that. But remember, the first steps into fellowship with God take us past a very ugly scene, a Savior dying a hideous death on a cross. That's because of the hideous nature of our sin. The second piece of furniture mentioned in our reading today is the table upon which the bread of the presence was placed. This table was covered with gold and had on it 12 loaves, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel, which was a perpetual thank offering to God. And we remember that this is not we remember this, and it symbolizes not only the manna from heaven as God's provision, but the fact that God continually provides for his people. On the left or south side of the holy place was the golden lampstand. Even when the lamps, which were fueled by pure olive oil, were being trimmed, the light was never allowed to go out. And this reminds us of the way that God lights our way by his truth all the time. There were curtains blocking the entrance to the holy place and from the holy place into the Holy of Holies. Any Israelite could come with sacrifice in his hand into the outer court. But only the priest could enter the holy place, and only the high priest could enter the Holy of Holies. Inside the Holy of Holies were two things, the Ark of the Covenant and the mercy seat, which was actually a part of the Ark. It was a chest about 4 feet long and just over 2 feet deep. It was built to contain the two tables of the law, a pot of manna and Aaron's rod, the rod of Moses that eventually became the rod of God or the staff of God, and was finally called Aaron's rod, was also put into the ark. The lid was pure gold, and it was called the mercy seat, or in reading the NIV, it would be atonement cover, flanked on either end by the cherubim of gold. It was at this mercy seat that God's Shekinah glory rested, and this is where he met Moses. Moving on to chapter 28, we read about the establishment of the Aaronic priesthood, Aaron's priesthood, and detailed instructions about the garments that the priests in Israel were to wear, as was the case with the temple. There are once again these detailed instructions, this time regarding clothing. The priests are to have sacred garments to give them dignity and honor. There was a sense in which the clothing of the priests was meant to elevate them in their own eyes and in the eyes of the people, and to place them in a class above the rest of the nation. Their vestments were for glory and beauty. Now, I want you to understand this distinction was valid. The priests really were mediators for the people. They stood between God and people, and they prayed. They prayed the prayers. They gave all of the confessions. They repented. They represented the people to God. Well, today, priests and pastors don't wear this same kind of vestment because God has made all of us into a kingdom of priests. A priest really was a mediator between the ordinary people and God. But no longer are pastors necessary to intercede for the people of God. We all have direct access to God and can pray to him ourselves with nobody standing in our way. We still need pastors to be ones who give spiritual guidance and who lead us and to help us stay organized as the community of God, but we don't need priests as mediators. Do you remember what the New Testament says? It says there is only one mediator now between God and man, and it is Jesus Christ. It also says that every blood-bought child of God is now, because of Christ's finished work, a priest. And all of us now have access to the very presence of God himself. Therefore, the apostle writes, "Let us come boldly to the throne of grace." And the writer of Hebrews says, "By a new and living way, that is through Christ and through his sacrifice, we can go into the Holy of Holies and meet with God." I may be your pastor, but I'm not your priest. You're a priest if Christ is your Lord, and if you serve under Jesus Christ, our great high priest, as I do. Well, as for the six specific garments that were detailed, here's a few points I want to mention. The ephod bore the name of Israel's 12 tribes. Because he wore the name of every tribe, the priest was aware and always ministering in the name of every tribe and every Jewish person in the nation. It defined who he was interceding for. The Urim and the Thummim were often used by the high priest in times of crisis to determine the will of God. Urim means light, and Thummim means perfection, and we know that they were used by the priest to get direction from God. We don't have devices like the Urim and Thummim today, but the principle remains the same. James says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, then let him ask God, who gives liberally to all who ask, and he will give it to you." We get our wisdom straight from God. The robe worn under the ephod had only one interesting feature. The bells on the hem of the garment. As the priest went through his duties, people could tell that he was still alive because they were hearing the bells ching, ching, ching as he was doing his duties. Ministering before the Lord was very serious business, and if the bells stopped sounding, it meant the priest stopped moving, which meant he had been struck dead. Well, the sound of the bells would continue going on, and if they kept going as the priest left the tabernacle, it was a cause for great rejoicing because it meant that God had accepted the sacrifice. The fifth piece of clothing was the turban. It had a gold plate attached to it that said, "Holiness to the Lord." That's what the whole of Israelite worship was about, holiness to the Lord. The undergarments are the last item that's mentioned, and they're necessary so that the priests will have appropriate modesty and humility as they minister before the Lord. You know, God pays a lot of attention to detail. He really does. He pays a lot of attention to beauty, to color, to symbol, to artistic expression. The tabernacle is one of these things that affirms the visual artists in our midst, that they have true and important value among us. It's particularly important in a society that's illiterate to have great symbol and artistry, because those would both point to God. Those elements communicate a lot about Him, and they help people to teach about Him. So art, color, symbol, well, it was a teaching aid for parents to children, for teachers to their students, in order to help them to remember the key attributes of God and His people. God's about excellence in all things, beauty, order, symbol, those all consistently point to Him. The tabernacle and the garments of the priests remind us of that. Isn't God's Word fun to discover? Well, this is Mark Ashton, hoping that you discover more of God with every reading in His Word. God bless you.